Hey, welcome to the TEEP Podcast, brought to you by CECO and UH Energy. I'm your host, Gary Gildert, here to bring you the latest in energy efficiency in 15 minutes or less. We'll talk about the upcoming events, we'll recap some of the past events, and we have a fantastic article by Carla and Hisham regarding methanol production. So first of all, we have our upcoming events. Happy holidays! There, to be honest, there's not an awful lot else that's going to be happening in the next month. But come January, we have the Energy Transition webinar series. There's events on January the 6th and the 20th. I can sign up for those. And all this information, by the way, is on our website and in our newsletter. So there's also the Energy in Action seminar series that restarts on January the 26th as well. So that's about it for the upcoming events. So let's talk about what we've seen in the past month since our last podcast. We had the Energy in Action seminar series on November the 17th. That was an in-person, not recorded event that it was actually quite good. We had Radford Smith from Google Cloud talk about AI, energy, and data centers. Data centers are coming, folks. They're going to need a lot of power and water. It was a very informative talk that I got to attend. But the big event last month was the Cougs for Energy Hackathon on November the 21st and 22nd. A special shout out goes to the winning team. By the way, the winning teams, they all got cash prizes. So it was pretty good for them. And the winning team was the Team Net Positive. Their project was sustainable soccer fields for communities. They actually talked about the renovation of a soccer field near downtown Houston. It is quite fascinating. Now, a couple of the members on the team were former classmates from my PhD days. So they actually came up to me and asked me about it because they knew I had something to do with energy efficiency. We talked about sustainability and resiliency hubs. They incorporated this in their winning presentation. Really great event all the way around. I also got to mentor a couple of other teams that did particularly well in the hackathon. Back on December the 2nd, there was the Energy Transition webinar series. A fascinating talk by Jamie Gonzalez talking about unlocking nature's power for a healthier, safer, more resilient Houston. It was quite interesting. I wasn't too sure how much I would get out of that talk. But you know, there is a lot of hidden energy efficiency and water conservation aspects to his talk. He talked about bringing nature back to urban areas. By cooling things down, you're going to reduce your load for air conditioning. And you know what? At the end, besides having good energy efficiency, it makes for a much more pleasant environment. So hats off to Jamie for that talk. The Energy in Action seminar series was on December the 9th as well. Yeah, that was Leo Chang, and he was from Lubrisol. He talked about beyond the hype, amplifying AI impacts in fuel and petrochemical industry. Went through several examples of where they were using AI. But you know, the most interesting thing that came out of that whole talk was in the Q&A afterwards, where they talked about the different types of AI models. There's the black box, purely stochastic modeling, where you just throw in the data and see if there's a relationship between them. Lots of problems with that. Then there's the white box, purely mechanistic, where you take good science to put together solid models. You can use AI to fill in the parameters, and that's a much sturdier model. Then they talked about a gray box of a mix of the two. I think that's going to be the future of AI because those stochastic models, you can get some of the funniest results out of that. I found it very informative, and maybe I'm a little bit more positive on AI after all that. Last event I want to refer to is the Rutgers event, Energy Live, that was at NRG December the 9th and the 10th. I looked through the agenda material. None of the talks really were of interest to me, so I did not pay attend the talks, but I got a ticket to go see the exhibits. Two-day event. I went through all the exhibits in under an hour. I'm going to admit I was really disappointed. Didn't see much of interest. I hope this is not how they do their events every year, but enough to be said on that. Okay, next up we have Carla Romero, who is one of our TEEP interns, talking about methanol synthesis.
So I want to start with why methanol? Most people don't realize this, but methanol is one of the largest chemical productions in the world. It's used as a feedstock, a solvent, and recently there's been interest in using it as a transportable, storable fuel.
Yeah, that's multi-use.
Yeah. And like any chemical process, making methanol consumes a lot of energy. So it's worth understanding which production method is more efficient. But before we dive into the different methods of methanol production, let's establish how we compare them. We use something called first law efficiency. It's a simple ratio. It's the useful outputs, the lower heating value of methanol over the total input of energy.
So why are you using lower heating value and not higher heating value?
We use the lower heating value because it reflects the real world industrial conditions better than the higher heating value.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So tell me about the different methods you've looked at.
Let's get into the dominant method, which is SMR, the steam methane reforming. This process has two main reactions. First, you reform methane with steam to produce syngas, and we love syngas.
Very useful.
Then you convert that syngas to methanol. And here's what is really interesting. The reforming reaction produces more hydrogen than what you actually need. It's a 3-to-1 ratio, but the methanol synthesis only requires a 2-to-1 ratio. So if we really think about it, we have this excess hydrogen just sitting around. What do we do with it? There are two ways we use to evaluate the efficiency of this process, depending on what you do with that excess hydrogen. The first method is when you burn that excess hydrogen to heat the reformer. There's no external fuel needed, and the process becomes essentially self-fueling. And the efficiency is pretty high. It's 79%. But here's the key benefit. Nearly all the carbon in your feedstock becomes methanol, not CO2.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty good deal, pretty efficient overall. What's the second method?
It's when you burn the hydrogen and, instead of burning the hydrogen, you sell it as a co-product. And now you need external fuel, which is about 0.26 moles per mole of methanol. But you also get, like I said, you get that hydrogen as a product. The efficiency is also pretty high. It's 87%.
Yeah, that's quite a boost in efficiency.
Yeah, but there's a trade-off. This higher efficiency, now you're producing around 0.35 kilograms of CO2 per kilogram of methanol. When I say a trade-off, you get lower efficiency with minimal emissions or higher efficiency with the added CO2.
Okay. So what is our second major method that you're going to talk about today?
It's coal gasification. It's not as common. Dominates in places like China, where 77% of their methanol is produced this way. The efficiency is about 67%. It's not quite as high as steam methane reforming.
That's a pretty big hit in efficiency. Any clues why that is?
Yeah, it comes down to the chemistry. In SMR, the methane has 4 hydrogen atoms per carbon, and coal is mostly carbon. So you'd have to generate nearly all the hydrogen through reactions with water. And you'd need 2.4 moles of carbon per mole of methanol.
Okay, so all these inputs, does this include the cost of remediation for emissions?
Nope. This analysis does not include the energy required to remove the sulfur dioxide, the mercury, and the ash.
Wow. Okay. So lots of emissions and low efficiency. Okay. Thank you, Carla, for that excellent review of those two methods. Next up, we have our other TEEP intern, Hisham Habli, and he's going to talk about two other methods for methanol synthesis.
Yeah, so these two new methods are novel green methanol production routes. And they're called green because we're using CO2 as a feedstock as opposed to using methane. And these methods are great because the CO2 feedstock is cheaper than using the methane feedstock. One of the first ways we use is CO2 hydrogenation, which is done in a catalytic reactor under high pressures and specifically high temps. And according to the lower heating values of the reactants in the products, it has an efficiency of roughly 88%.
Well, that sounds like the highest efficiency we've heard so far.
Yeah.
And is it a complicated process?
It's actually a very simple process. It just has a larger operating cost, especially because we're having to use 3 moles of hydrogen per mole of methanol produced.
Okay, so what is the other method that you've looked at today?
So the other method is instead of doing a direct CO2 hydrogenation, you're going to use CO2 reduction, and that is done through an electrolyzer. In CO2 reduction, that CO2 is broken up into carbon monoxide and oxygen, and then that carbon monoxide is reacted with 2 moles of hydrogen as opposed to the 3 moles previously stated.
Okay, so that's a nice hydrogen savings that's involved there.
Yeah, absolutely. And the only byproduct in this case would be the oxygen. In the previous method, there would be water produced. In this case, it's just oxygen. While it's not valued in the heating value, the heating value efficiency, in this method, it comes out to a roughly 83% efficiency.
Okay, so that's a little bit lower than the first one, but what are the advantages that you see on this process?
Well, one of the main advantages is the requirement of less hydrogen, which, you know, would in turn make it a little bit more cost effective as opposed to requiring 3 moles of hydrogen per mole of methanol produced.
Okay, so that's a very interesting trade-off that you have there. So if it's so efficient, why isn't this the most popular method of making methanol?
So the main reason is just hydrogen. Hydrogen is very expensive to produce as opposed to using the methane route and reforming it.
Great. So in this analysis, we did not include the cost of compression, process heating, or purification. Why is that?
Those values of heating are negligible in with respect to the heating values of the, you know, reactants in the products. So the value of the compression and all the heating is negligible compared to that of the heating values of the reactants in the products. And also the compression and the heating required is relatively the same. So looking at the efficiency and with regards to the heating values holds a good basis all around.
Okay, excellent. Thanks for the recap. And if you're interested in more information on this subject, please take a look at the article in our newsletter that is published monthly. So thank you for listening to the TEAP podcast. I'm your host, Gary Gildert, and this is brought to you by the State Energy Conservation Office, the Media Lab at the University of Houston, and our excellent interns, Carla Romero and Hisham Habli. We'll be back in 3 weeks from now for another recap of industrial energy efficiency in 15 minutes or less.